Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Whiplash Talk. This is Sunshine. It's a beautiful day today where I am at. The sun is absolutely beaming down on all of us, and I hope it's doing the same for you where you are. I wanted to apologize. 2 weeks ago, I was not able to do my show. I got some last-minute news right before the show was to go on, and I just want to thank BBS Radio and the team there for just jumping in and replaying my last show. I hope that when you listen to it, that there was something that you caught the second time that you didn't catch the first time. And I thank you for your grace and your patience as I had to deal with some stuff. And I am back and I'm in the saddle and we're ready to go. We ended the show last time talking about, you know, what are you doing to get prepared for if, you know, the supply chain breaks down or if something happens. I was going to talk about the bridge collapse and interesting way that it just imploded so beautifully as opposed to being twisted and really taking a hit. It just appeared to have imploded, in my opinion. I am not a munitions expert. I am not an explosion person or an explosive device person. But I was going to talk about that last week and about how the ships that were in port will have a very hard time getting out of port because that wreckage is there and blocking the exit and the entrance into. And the ships that were there ready to come into port that needed to fuel and unload and reload, they're not able to get in. There's no way in, no way out. And then the trucks, the 18-wheelers and the trucks that needed to get the stuff that was already in port out, that was one of their main bridges to get across the bridge to get to the highway system to go north-south and then to go east-west once they got down to the east-west highways. So I was going to talk about kind of tagging on to the show that we did before about supply chain issues. And we in the United States are so comfortable that we don't realize that the things that we see in third world countries could absolutely happen here in the United States as well. And that was absolutely a perfect example of what could seriously happen. So I was wanting to talk about, you know, what are you doing to protect your family? What are you doing to protect yourself if you're single? What are you doing to protect yourself, to provide for yourself? Or if you're in a family situation, or if you have a loved one that you share life with, what are you doing to protect yourself and your loved ones? Gold is quite expensive right now, but gold is a very good investment. But I would say if you are going to invest in that, absolutely have it on hand. Put it in a gun safe, put it in a whatever safe, lock it up, keep it close to you. Do not buy it on paper and trust that they're selling you something that they actually have access to. Same with silver. Silver has gone up in price. All the silver people are super excited because silver's going up. We'll see what happens, you know, when it hits 30, you know, that kind of thing. So when you buy silver, you know, make sure it's silver that you can keep on hand. Another thing to do is, you know, like I talked about before, I think you can go to the pawn shops and they have pre-1964 or 1964 and older silver coins, dimes and quarters. You know, check and see what they're selling them for. A few weeks ago would have been a lot cheaper, or not a lot, but it would have been more cheaper, more economical, I should say, to purchase that because they follow the current, you know, silver and gold prices that the market is showing. So another thing that I personally would encourage you to check into is lead. And we won't get into details on that, but investing in lead is a good idea as well. When you're looking at storing and providing for your family, obviously you're thinking about, you know, your food, but don't forget about your medications. If you have people on insulin or things that might tend to become more critical if you can't get to a pharmacy or the goods cannot get to the pharmacy, that's something that people need to think ahead on. And then, you know, what are you going to do for energy if, for instance, the power grid in your area goes down from, you know, odd tornadoes or something, let's just say a barge hits a bridge, you know, let's just say an 18-wheeler hits a main power station. What are you going to do if they don't have the tools or the equipment that comes from an overseas country to be able to fix that power grid quickly? We're coming up on summer here in North America and in the United States area. And what are you going to do in the summertime when it's warm and possibly you don't have electricity? And what are you going to do for your energy sources, or how are you going to handle, you know, that kind of thing? If you don't have anything to cook with, do you have anything to cook outside with? Those are things to think about as well. And then, of course, I'm a real softie for critters. And so don't forget, when you're storing up, don't forget to store up for your pets. They need food too. And if they're on water, if they're on meds, you know, store up on their stuff as well. And water, you know, we can go a long time without food, but we can't go very long without water, and neither can your pets. And think about this. I mean, it may not taste the best, but there's water in your canned corn that you stored, and there's water in your green beans and stuff like that. So that's a source of water if, in fact, you get to a point like that. So I know it sounds silly, but in the sources that I've been following, they're all different sources, but they're all kind of saying the same thing, that things are fixing to get rough. And I'm just going to be honest, we're pretty soft here in the United States, and our borders have been open for quite a while. And the invasion has already happened. I have no problem with anybody that wants to come to our country to make a better life for themselves. I support that, but I support it in doing it the proper way. And I am concerned that we have a revolving door, and we have an agreement with Mexico and Canada that whomever comes through whichever country first, that is the country where they're to declare their request for becoming a citizen. And so, as the news has said, even the mainstream media news has shown that, you know, the southern border coming from Mexico, they have that wide open. It's just coming through, and we don't have the border patrol to be able to handle the volume of people coming through. And even if you're off mainstream media and you're doing your research, even some of the border patrol people are saying, we're being forced to process people through before we can do background checks. And then once the background checks come through, and that person's already through process, they're gone. And there are people coming into our country that are known terrorists, and there are people that are there to possibly make a better life for themselves, or possibly not. So I'm just not trying to put fear into anyone, but I'm trying to say, my friend Bill used to say, the body can't go where the mind hasn't already gone. And if you're a Q listener, that goes against the take your thoughts captive, or, you know, command your spirit to take your thoughts and drop them into your heart. But where I'm going with this is, you know, is it going to be a possible Mad Max rough for us? I don't know. Is it going to be a martial law tough for us? I don't know. What about common law tough, where the law is taken into the hands of the people in the streets? You know, is that going to happen? I don't know. But if we don't think about it and think ahead, and we don't keep our heads on a swivel and watch what's going on around us when we go in and out of grocery stores, and when we're driving down the road, what's ahead of us, what's happening, what's behind us. If we're not paying attention, then we're easy prey. And my heart is to help everybody be a little more aware. If just one person that listens to this show is prepared, then I've done my job. So it's not just going to be an overseas thing that we're used to here in the United States. We've got some issues that could stem. And I'm talking sooner rather than later. I'm not talking when we get close to the elections. I'm talking sooner than later. I'm not going to give dates, but I think summertime we're going to be seeing some stuff that we never thought we would see, not just in the States, but in the world, and things about, foreign entities and ETs and, families that have been ruling for a long time and doing some pretty evil, wicked stuff. And if you're a Q follower or Q listener, you know what I'm talking about. If you're not, find Q on BBS radio and start listening and get caught up. So I just want to say it might happen in your backyard. Are you ready? Are you ready? And if you're not, what can you do to get ready? Do you know your neighbors? Do you know your neighbors well enough to where, you've got potatoes and they've got carrots? And do you know your neighbors to where you guys can, form a neighborhood watch just to protect your neighborhood? Not out of fear, but out of wisdom. So I don't really want to harp on this anymore, and I'm just going to keep going on into what I was going to talk about. You all know that I started with Less Talk because my past year has been, since January 5th when my mother passed, 2023, has been an entire whiplash. Everything that I knew was left is right, and everything that I thought was up was down, and everything that was forward was backwards, and the way I was raised in the Christian church with organized religion was absolutely turned upside down and backwards with the research that my friend Bill gently coached me and guided me into understanding and awareness. And it was to the point to where I've shared earlier that I didn't know. I knew how to pray. I knew how to pray for healing. I knew how to pray for people. I knew how to stand on the word. I knew my bubble. But after I got home from my mother's funeral, and Bill and I were listening to Q, and it was the first time I'd really listened to Q full through. And of course, it would be one that would just hit to the heart. But it was, sometimes you got to peel the Band-Aid off. And he had said, that there is no heaven. And I was like, wait, what? I was holding on to confessing and even telling everybody, I'll be okay. I'm going to see my mom again. I'll see her in heaven. We'll be in heaven together. And when that Band-Aid got ripped off, I've shared earlier that I told Bill, I was like, where's my mom? And he was also a Christian from age 26. So he was 62 at the time, probably. And he, in the most gentle, sweet voice that he could muster, was like, I don't know. And he is a strong man, and he has answers, and he did not have that answer. So this last year's been tough. So Whiplash Talk was birthed because I realized, going through the dark night of the soul that I found myself in, that there wasn't anything else out there that would help people when they were in the middle of the muck and mire. It was always what I could find. I shouldn't say there wasn't anything. I could not find anything. And the things that I was finding were people that had already been through their, dark night of the soul, and had already walked that walk. And now they were talking about what they'd been through, but they're all, shiny, clean new car. And I am covered in muck and mire, and I can't even hardly breathe because I'm so swallowed up with grief and loss and I don't know how to process it. And we even kind of joked at one time about Whiplash Talk, about talking about how, you know, I'm swimming through mud on my way to ascension and I don't know how to grieve because I don't want to be abducted on my way there, because I don't want to feed that negative energy to the entities that absolutely devour it. They just suck life right out of you. And I'm like, no, don't want to do that. So that's how Whiplash Talk was birthed. And that's where you find me now. I am still processing. I'm still moving forward. I connected with, I should pay a quarter for every time I say, Dawn, you should keep track of that. We could make millions. But anyway, when I went to start putting this together for today, I got to thinking, there was a book that was referred to me by someone that I'm talking to, helping me process things. And it was a person that is on a website that's called forthepeople.space. That's a website that Q recommends. There's a lot of history, a lot of data. If you are working on getting enlightened, we could, you could get a lot of great information there. It's eye-opening and it'll shake you to your core, but it's good. So this person that I found, I've connected with, she told me about this book. It's called Falling into Grace by, I'm going to probably stumble all over this name, but Adyasanti. And it's called Insights on the End of Suffering. And I started reading this book and it really hit home. And I got the audiobook because I tend to always be on the go. And if I sit down to read, sometimes I get a little sleepy or I need to take my thoughts, you know, control my spirit to take my thoughts and drop them into my heart so I can focus. And I got the audiobook and I'm so glad I did, because it's read by the author and he embellishes on the book as he's reading the book, and then he goes off and embellishes on his thoughts and then comes back into the book and picks up and goes on. So I encourage anybody that's listening to write down the book, Falling into Grace. The last name of the author is spelled Adyashanti. It's a 2013, published in 2013 by Sounds True Incorporated out of Boulder. And when I started looking at this book, I was listening to it last night actually, and I fell asleep and I started looking at it, and there's a chapter 4, it's called Letting Go of Struggle. And that is Whiplash Talk. That's why I'm here. I need to figure out how to get to that point. And there's in chapter 4, section 4, whatever, the silence is the ground from which awakening springs. And it talks about the one common thing about any true revelation is that it will stun your mind, because at that moment we comprehend something that's not just in thought. Revelation and insight come from somewhere else, from some other space. They come from a place that we as a culture seem to have so little respect for, a place called silence. What's more neglected in our lives than silence? What do we run away from more than silence? Many of us would rather cling to our ideas, our beliefs, and our opinions, the very things that distance us from truth and reality and life, than to experience the silence. We spend so much energy running away from silence, that silence is the ground from which awakening springs. It's the ground from which we shift off this egoic state of consciousness, out of this belief in separation. After all, separation is ultimately just a belief. It's a story made up in our minds. He goes on to say, I'm not saying that we have to try to become quiet, that we have to practice stillness. If you really want to become quiet and still, simply allow yourself to see that all of the thoughts in your head are just stories. I'm going to stop right here. If you're following Q, this really, it resonated with me because a lot of what he's saying, this author is saying, resonates with what Q has been teaching on and about how important it is to command your spirit to take the thoughts in your head and drop them into your heart. Work from your heart center, work from within, go within. And so a lot of this really resonated. And sometimes when you're trying to, like I would say, make a lasagna, you know, you're putting a layer in and putting a layer in, and then finally you're like, ah, you have like an aha moment that he talks about later. It's like, I get it. So he goes on to say, they're not good or bad stories, you know, just the stories in your head. They're not right or wrong. Our mind is a storyteller. And I will say it was designed to be that way. He says, and it keeps us removed from the silence, the quiet that is always present. Often, our minds are really good storytellers, and other times, really poor storytellers. But ultimately, the mind just tells stories, and a story isn't real. It isn't actually true. So that was a mind warp. That was a whiplash right there. I was like, what? Wait, what? A story isn't real, and it isn't actually true. He goes on to say, silence is something that disarms us, which is why we move away from it so often. Our society is one in which we're more and more preoccupied with noise. He said last week he was driving down the highway and he looked over and saw a group of high school kids walking home from school. They all had their cell phones. There were 7 or 8 of them, and every single one of them was either talking on their phone or texting. No one was interacting with the people or the environment around them. He said he thought, this is crazy. Here's this group of people walking home together, but not actually connecting. He continues, we've gotten to a point where we're so intimidated by silence and the present moment before us that even when we're together, we try our best to make sure that we're very busy. We're physically together without actually being together. We'll walk home together, but we'll talk to somebody else. We're doubly occupied just to make sure there's no real silence, no real communion. This isn't a bad thing. I'm not even saying it shouldn't happen. I'm just saying that if we look at the world around us, we see that we are conditioned to not listen deeply. Because isn't that what silence is? It's a listening. It's deep, wordless listening. He continued to say, as one wise Christian mystic said, stop telling God what you want and instead listen to what God has to say to you. That's a very wise thing to say, and it comes from a basic insight into how our minds incessantly assert themselves, which ultimately is just another form of struggle. So there are all these various ways that we struggle with ourselves and our experiences, trying to control life and those around us. The ways that we struggle keep us locked and confined within the prison of the ego. When we begin to see that our mind is just a storyteller, however, then we begin to listen, not for more thoughts or more complicated understandings, but for the silence. It is when you listen in this way that you can see that it is only your mind that has the capacity to make you suffer. Only your mind has the capacity to convince you to struggle. Only your mind, nothing else. It's all an inside job. It's all happening inside you. He continues to go on. The unknown is our doorway. In order to see through the mind and deeply ingrained and the deeply ingrained sense of separation that continues to generate so much confusion and suffering in our lives. We must take a chance. We must leave what we know and enter the mysterious reality of the unknown. The unknown is a very intimate place. You may feel very exposed when you open yourself to this inner space of unknowing, but really, the unknown is our only doorway. It's by allowing ourselves to not know that we can become truly sensitive, open, and available. It's the most humbling thing in the world to admit that we don't know, to surrender the fact that we can't know the nature of reality in our minds. And I go back to whenever I asked my friend Bill, "Where's my mom?" And it was very humbling the way he answered when he said, I don't know. This realization, talking about, you know, not knowing and to surrender to the fact that we can't know the nature of reality within our minds or with our minds. This realization is what opens the way for us. The way to the greatest knowing is through not knowing. As the great mystic St. John of the Cross said, I didn't put these titles in here, guys. I'm just reading that part. In order to come to the knowledge you have not, you must go by a way in which you know not. He goes on to say, I love this quote, and I do too. He says, it's entirely paradoxical. It is what I spoke about earlier and what his teacher referred to as the backwards step, coming to knowledge not through knowing, but through not knowing. Once you get to the frontier of your mind, its farthest outreach, you'll come to a place where you can't go any further, where the next thought would just take you back into the mind rather than beyond it. When most people get to this point, they either turn back into their mind or they just start to move along this imaginary frontier, imagining what it would be like to move beyond it. This is the doorway to the place beyond suffering. When you find yourself at this boundary of your mind, when you've gone to that place where you realize that you can't go any deeper within the mind, then you begin to stop. You begin to let go. You begin to embrace this unknowing. Embracing the unknown makes us wonderfully and beautifully humble, not humiliated, but truly humble. True humility is a very open state. It's a state of great availability. And it's from this state of great availability and openness, from the willingness to realize how little we really know, that our consciousness begins to shift. It begins to shift from the mind and ego into its natural state. By natural, he means something that's not conceived, something that's not staged or altered, something that doesn't take effort to maintain. In order to find the end of struggle, we have to find a state of consciousness that's totally natural, that doesn't fight against our inner and outer environment. That's what he calls aware spirit or awake spirit. It's an awake emptiness. Not to be confused with woke. Just putting that in there. Enter laughter. That may sound abstract, as it's an awake emptiness, he says. It may sound abstract, but simply put, it's the openness to a lived sense of not knowing. What are you when you don't define yourself? What becomes of the past, of the present, or of the future when you don't go into your mind to think about it? It's not so difficult to have a taste of this, to get a feel for this openness and ease. But don't be satisfied with just a fleeting moment of this state of being. This is the doorway in. Dive fully into this openness and avail yourself of the intimacy found there in not knowing. I led with this because this is the point I really wanted to get to that really hit home with me. Because I've mentioned previously that when I hear, you know, go within, I had a really hard time understanding that and had to do some research and found some different people that wrote about it that really helped me understand that. But this next part, I talked about a previous author, Barbara Martin, that had talked about silver cords and all of that. And I still do not have a full understanding of all of that, you know, silver cords attaching, you know, your spirit, your source to, you know, your physical being. But he had a chapter that jumped off the page at me, or at, in this chapter, he had a section that jumped off the page at me, and it was titled, Who You Are Before You Were Born. Not who you were, but who you are before you were born. And I didn't share this, but this particular person was from Buddhism background, but he does reference a lot of other religions throughout this. He says, there's a wonderful quote from the Gospel of Thomas in which Jesus says, blessed is he who existed before being born. Jesus is pointing here to being itself. It is acknowledging that essence of who and what we are before our minds created an image of ourselves as something separate and distinct from all of life. So, who and what we are before our minds created an image of ourselves as something separate and distinct from all of life. Truthfully, we can't imagine what we were before we were born. We can tell ourselves a story about it or propose a theory about it, but this is not what Jesus was referencing. Before you took form, before you took shape, before you were an infant in your mother's womb, before your parents came together, what were you? Don't answer it with your mind. Just imagine. Then he goes to continue. Now that's what I mean when I say spirit. I don't mean fancy theories about spirituality. I don't mean methodology about what spirit is or an idea. I mean that which you have always been. He goes on to say, generally, our minds are so cluttered with ideas that we really can't touch upon what we've always been, but we do have an intuition of it. We have some vague sense that we're something other than we're pretending to be. When we pretend, there is a deeply rooted feeling that something is missing. We can see that every image we have of ourselves is deficient at its core. We very rarely confess this feeling of insufficiency to one another. We keep it a secret out of fear that we are the only ones who feel this way. We think everyone else is quite clear about who and what they are. However, if you really ask people, and if you are willing to be genuinely open, they'll tell you, yes. I felt this uncertainty too. Have you? I know I have, especially now in launching Whiplash Talk in the past year of getting my, in opening my eyes and seeing what's going on in the world and that this is not just the perfect life that I thought it was. So yeah, I felt it too. He goes on to say, they'll share with you that they've touched this realization of how the identity they've created for themselves doesn't really capture the feeling, the essence of who they are in their lives. They'll admit that often it feels as if they are acting a play. Many of us go through life in this way. We're playing a part that we learned how to play, but the problem is that we don't know how to unplay it. We think we need another part, perhaps a better part, but really, is that true? What would happen if for a moment we stopped and didn't play any part? If we allowed ourselves to be unborn and to touch upon who and what we were before we, spirit, took form, before we appeared to be someone distinct and different? If you stop in this place of not knowing who you are, if you resist the temptation to conceptualize an identity, You'll begin to touch a lived sense of an inner presence. You'll open to what I call an alive, pregnant nothingness. This is not a nothingness that is blank or absent of any qualities, but rather one that is extraordinarily vital and rich with potential. Here we can enter a mysterious dimension that is not accessible through our normal routes of thinking and understanding. We can see clearly that what we are isn't something we can think about. We can only think about what we're not. What we are in reality is alive, awake, and conscious nothingness, existing as pure potential. Because what we are really isn't something we can think about. Imagine that. Because what we are really isn't something we can think about. From this place of pure potential and alive presence, he says, we come into the world of form. We are birthed into the world. Our form develops in the womb of our mother as we journey from a vast expanse of emptiness into the physical dimension. This form with which we begin to identify a merely physical form is actually something immense that develops out of this pure potential. After 9 months from this warm, comfortable womb, there you are. The suddenness of being birthed into this life is quite a shock. It's such a shock that spirit, which is open and free, immediately contracts and grasps onto the body, just like you grab onto someone when you're at a movie theater and you become frightened. Consciousness also does this when you're first born. It's such a change of environment that spirit grabs hold of the body, and at that moment, identification begins. It is possible that this entire process of birth into the world of form could be seen in a different way. Yes, birth into form happens, and there is a vivid appearance of a body-mind, a beautiful, wonderful, unimaginably creative display. We witness spirit masquerading as a body in a form that contains a mind, senses, and feelings. But as we look very closely, we perceive that there is nothing about this form, this body, that is in any way separate from where it came, the source of spirit. He continues to describe beautifully that even though this process of birth into form and our maturation as a human being, most of what we really are remains unborn. This unborn quality is not something that you lose as you age. It's easy to go into a trance of the mind and believe that you've lost your original state, your true openness, your true oneness with spirit. But this is just a thought. It is just a trick of the mind, something Q has taught over and over and over again. That was my comment, by the way, not his. The author continues, in this very instant, we see this extraordinary form with blood pumping, heart beating, and lungs breathing. This form has been endowed with the capacity to think and feel and imagine, to love and to hate, to question and to assert, and with the amazing capacity to feel sadness and grief and loss, as well as joy and peace and profound happiness. It almost makes no sense. All of this is part of the expression of your unborn nature, of your spiritual nature. What's unseen presents itself in the form of a body, a mind, and a very unique personality structure. Every birth in the world of physical form is given a sense of self, so that spirit can then operate through it. To be everything and nothing at the same time, it is possible to start to feel in this very moment that our bodies, our minds, even our personalities are ways through which our spiritual essence connects with the world around us. That these bodies and minds are actually sensing organs for spirit. Our physical forms are the vehicle through which spiritual essence gets to experience its own mysterious creation, to be bewildered in its creation, shocked by it, in awe of it, and even confused by it. Spirit is pure potential that contains every possible outcome. From the standpoint of our spiritual essence, nothing to be avoided. No experiences need to be turned from. Everything in its way is a gift, even the painful things. In reality, all of life, every moment, every experience is an expression of spirit. The book continues to go on, and it's a pretty amazing book. It was very, very helpful to me, and I apologize for reading a book to you guys for most of the show. I think I'll go to a little bit of a break here whenever BBS can launch my music, and then I'll come back and I'll close it out, and we'll send you guys on your way with a beautiful Saturday from Sunshine. We'll be back in a couple of minutes, guys. And I'm back, everybody. Sunshine back at you on Whiplash Talks. I wanted to explain a little bit of why I was not able to do my show 2 weeks ago. I had shared with you guys that my life friend, my life partner, the one that I spent the last 4 years with as a dear, sweet friend, the man that helped bring me gently through to awareness and to enlightenment, passed about an hour before my show was to go on the air. So, as I said, BBS Radio really came to my rescue and was able to go ahead and just play my last show for you guys. But I wanted to let everybody know that no matter what road you're on or what path you're on, that even if you're right in the middle of your whiplash, even if you're right in the middle of your dark night of the soul, don't stop. Don't stop. There's a reason that you chose to come here for this time, for this season. Don't stop. Keep digging. Figure out why you're here, who you are, like this book was saying, figure out who you are and why you're here and stay plugged in. Stay plugged in because we need you. We need everyone here. We're coming up on times that are unprecedented that we've never had before. And we chose to be here during this time. I don't know all of my purpose here yet. But I do know that I'm still healthy and I'm still strong, and that this talk show has a purpose. And I will continue to prepare more, and we will get guest speakers, and we will continue to be here for you. I do want to say, my friend, boy, we're going to make a lot of money today, Dawn, on all these ums. I'm sorry. My friend was not able to read my last text to him. And it was thanking him for guiding me and leading me into enlightenment and awareness, for coaching me financially, and for all the honeydew things that he did around the house for me and my home whenever he was visiting. I let him know that my respect for him was immeasurable, and love for him ran deep and true. I continued to reassure him as he was walking out a battle, a physical attack on his body. I continued to tell him that I was continuing with my affirmations and my commands for him. And that was out of the deep bond that we built on trust and respect. And I let him know that it was my sincerest honor to know him and to share life with him on this side of the spiritual world. And then I signed off and said, always in your corner, sunshine. So I just want to let you guys know, love on those that are in your life. Let them know you care for them. Don't let little things get in the way. If there's something there, we had nothing that was between us that had not been spoken about. But I do believe that he can hear me and see me. And I thank you guys for allowing me to say goodbye to him. And I'll have my stuff back together in 2 weeks. We'll have more to talk about. We'll have more news going on. And go and be great. Go do you. Go be you. Go find your happy. Go play in the dirt. Go ground. Go earthing. Love on your neighbors. Love on your family. Love on yourself. And I'm going to sign off a little early. And hopefully I don't throw BBS into too much of a curveball. But you guys, take care of you, and I'll be back in 2 weeks, and I'll have it pulled back together. It's still a little raw right now, but I'll have it pulled back together. You guys have a great 2 weeks, and I'll be back soon. Sunshine out.